Blog Talk Radio.
Of the year, independent, a career, there's not a thing that she couldn't do. Oh, she's alert, she's aware, she's got legs like a stair, and a 157 IQ. She has several PhDs, speaks fluent Japanese, and the shoes will always match with her purse. Whatever street she's walking down, everybody turns around and says, "Hello, nurse."
Welcome to BK Walker and Blog Talk Radio. It's been a while, I know. As you can tell, I can't even talk anymore. But today I am pleased to welcome author and criminal lawyer Glenn Aaron. He has written the Prison Trilogy, and it's a nonfiction work as an observer in the prison, and he tells in chronological order how he came to be a lawyer for a Wall Street Journal heiress and her gay husband, and how that representation landed him in federal prison. That is the first book. The second book tells of his cellmates, and the third book talks about the other prisoners, his experiences, and takes a hard look at the American criminal justice system, which I think it's a fine tune because I believe that they should have taken a look at that a long time ago. So help me welcome Glenn Aaron. Hello, Glenn. Are you there?
I'm here. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. I am very excited to have you, and I am very excited to read your trilogy. Why don't you tell us what exactly inspired you to tell your tales of your experience?
Well, I guess like most people, I always had a bit of an itch to write. I graduated undergraduate school from Baylor University with a degree in English. And during that period, well, I wanted to write, but I went straight from there to law school. Well, that took all my time. And then from law school straight into 40 years of law practice, and that took all my time. So when I wrote legalese, but Lord, who wants to read that? Then when I did go to prison, I was assigned Colonel George Trofimoff as my cellmate in a cell not much larger than your bathroom. And I was there in that particular cell with George for 13 months, so we didn't have a whole lot to do. He quickly knew I was a lawyer, although I didn't tell him that. I guess that's the way I talk. And he wanted me to write another appeal for him. I said, well, I'd like to know more about you before I do something like that. And so I took copious notes for months, and his story was so astounding to me. I thought, when I get home, I've got to write this story. People should know about it. So that's where it started.
Nice. And, well, it probably wasn't fun, though, right?
Oh, no, no. I don't want to go back. I can tell you that.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the trilogy itself, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, the Prison Trilogy is actually also might be called the Observer Trilogy, because I take all three books, all three situations as an observer, and try to follow what literary teachers tell you to do, which is not tell the reader, but show the reader. So I've tried to live up to that. In the first book, of the trilogy, It's entitled The Ronnie Lee and Jackie Bancroft Spencer Morgan Story, a tale of people, greed, envy, manipulation, even crime. Jackie Bancroft was an heiress of the Wall Street Journal, and I was one of her many lawyers, but more than anything else, I was what you might call her consigliere in the latter part of her life. She married another client of mine who was her interior decorator. Jackie was 72. Ron Morgan, the interior decorator, was a 50-year-old gay man. So Jackie really wanted to kind of have the last fling of her life, and I guess she pretty much accomplished that. They took these really nice world cruises a lot, you know, where they had staterooms, and Jackie was worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They had separate staterooms. The cruises usually ran $100,000 a month. But I got a call in the wee hours one morning from the ship that Jackie and Ron was on, and they were in the middle of the Atlantic, and Jackie was seriously, critically ill. It became my job to get her back, which was not easy internationally, but I did get that done. But when she got to the hospital, she didn't last long. Her death was rather mysterious. It's mysterious to this day, and that's within the book. In fact, that's where the first chapter starts, and then I work backwards. Ron Morgan, who also was my client, of course, Jackie wanted to give him money and things and toys that he might want. But I had Ron in bankruptcy. He had over $2 million in debts, and Jackie was a pretty strong-willed person. She wasn't about to pay one dime of his debts, but she wanted to be able to give him money and buying things. So I set up a blind trust outside of bankruptcy. And over the course of 5 years, Jackie put $40 million into that trust. And as I say, these were very wealthy people. Well, that trust is what ended up being interpreted as bankruptcy fraud, which sent me to prison. So I tell that story. I tell the story of Ron. I tell the story of Jackie. And basically how very wealthy people live and what it's like to be a consigliere to one of them. The second book, as I've already mentioned, started when I got to prison. I was assigned as a cellmate to Colonel George Trofimoff. The colonel was the highest-ranking U.S. Army officer ever convicted of spying. He was serving life without parole. In fact, he died last year in prison. He wanted me to write his appeal. And I kept putting that off. I really didn't want to do it. And so finally I told him, well, look, George, I can't write your appeal because I can't make up the law. I don't have any of the court rulings. I don't have any of the facts under oath. And he said, oh, yeah, you do, Glenn. He pulled up his thin prison mattress, which is about an inch thick, and there was the entire trial transcript. He slept on it every night. It covered the whole base of the iron bed. And so I didn't have an excuse anymore. So I worked on that for several months, filed his appeal, but of course it was denied. But the story of that trial, the story of the FBI's sting, which they worked on him for a year and a half. He kept telling them he didn't want to talk to them. He didn't know it was the FBI. They were saying they were from the D.C. Washington, D.C. Russian embassy and were Russian, that needed to clear up a few things. And finally, they offered him $45,000 to tell a story about spying for the KGB. He did not know it, but at the time, the FBI was monitoring his bank account and knew that he was in need of money. So he finally took the bait, told the story, went to trial, which is a travesty within itself, and got a life sentence. So that's the second book. The third book is my story. It's much shorter, but of the hopelessness of others in prison, also what the prison experience is like. It's in two parts, but it's not an oh poor me tale. It's really a straightforward and honestly eye-opening enlightenment unknown to the average person. And through all of these books, believe it or not, there's a good bit of humor, a good bit of humor relief that kind of helps balance to some extent the seriousness of the base plot and subject matter. So that's the trilogy.
I love it. I love it. Like I said, I cannot wait to read it. I have been eyeing this, and I'm going to throw this out there now in case anybody wants to check it out. His website is www.glennaaron.com, and that's Aaron with two A's, or the prison. It's the prison trilogy, or no, it's not. What is it, Glenn?
Well,
Observer.
You can do the Observer, or you can do the prison trilogy. It'll come up either way, or just do my name either way, or you can order it through your favorite bookstore.
And it's also available at Amazon. So I just wanted to throw that out there because I know that we have a ton of true crime readers within my reader base. And I just know that this is going to be awesome. And Glenn also has a video for each book. And he's currently on tour at the Virtual Book Tour Cafe. So make sure you check him out. And you can visit his site, check him out on Amazon, and let us know what you think, because I think this is going to be fantastic. Now, Glenn, while you were in there, you know, it says that you're taking a hard look at the American criminal justice system. Now, I can't tell you, I'm not a political person. You know, I don't vote because I just don't get into politics, but I do get angry at certain things, you know, that come out on TV and or on the news, you know, and it has to do, you know, we just recently watched a movie for Reuben Hurricane Carter. And how many people have you actually run into that were completely, that you believe them when they tell you that they are innocent? How many innocents are actually in jail that should not be there?
Oh, I think it's a good 20%. And I read that somewhere through, I can't remember whether it was the Pew Research. You can find a lot of these statistics in Pew Research. The Pew Foundation. But my recollection is that it's potentially 20%. When we say prison, I'm talking about state, federal, and county jail.
Yeah, that's still a high number. I mean, that's a pretty high number. And it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
And I commend you for writing this. And, you know, we're going to have readers and people that want to write a book but maybe don't know how. Now, how did you go about writing this? I mean, it's your experiences, but in order to write their story, how did you have to go about that? Was there any legal aspects that you had to, like, get their permission where you had to have them sign off, you know?
Oh, yes. George had to sign off. I prepared a power of attorney for him to sign in favor of me for writing his story. And he understood that when I wrote it, I would own the copyright. Unfortunately, he has no heirs that are interested in him. But you do have to get permission. Of course, as I wrote the other stories, I didn't have to get permission of Jackie Bancroft. Couldn't anyway, because she was dead. Or Ron, because I actually lived that. I'm telling the story through my eyes as I know it, as a lawyer for the parties. That was different then, of course, for Colonel George Trofimoff. I had to have his permission to write his life.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that, because, I mean, there is a thing where you can do an autobiography of somebody else, but this was through your experience, through your eyes. So I just wanted people to be clear if they're going to be talking about somebody else's story, how they go about that. Now, what kind of trouble have you had during the writing of this? Did you experience like writer's block, or did it just flow so easily that your fingers couldn't move fast enough?
Well, I've never really experienced writer's block per se, like a fiction writer probably does, because this is all nonfiction, research, taking notes, reading transcripts, or living the situation itself. I guess if I didn't have any writer's block with the Georges, but it was so long and it was so much, it took me 10 years to write it.
Wow.
But at the same time, I was writing the other stories as well, and found them much easier to write because I actually lived them.
Right. And I get that. I do, but you know, I write both fiction and nonfiction, and it's still, for me, it just seems like my fingers can't go fast enough when I'm telling any story. It drives me nuts.
Well, you're fortunate.
What kind of, you know, everybody always wants to know, like, how you go about marketing. How did you learn about the whole publishing and marketing process?
Well, I'm like so many of us independents, I knew absolutely nothing about it. But for me, I just, you know, I was looking for the easiest way for me to go in that regard. And I have an editor. She's been my editor from the start, Natalie Rotunda. She led me, she's very, very experienced, and she led me along the way once she understood that I wanted to go the easiest path I could. And so she edited all of my work, and then I sent it through CreateSpace, and they published it. And then I hired an independent, very reasonably, formatter for Kindle, to put the books on Kindle. So,
and I love self-publishing. I know that there's like traditional publishing, but I do. I'm another one that loves self-publishing because you have control of every aspect. What's your favorite thing about being a self-published author?
Well, you know, I love the independence. I love not having to answer. We've all read these stories about, you know, what you have to go through with a major publishing house, and I'm quite aware and have read their contracts, which are brutal. In fact, let's see, what is it called? The Authors Guild, I think. Authors Guild has just come out last month to try to fight with them. They'll probably lose that battle, you know, about those huge royalties they take and owning your copyright and all of those kinds of things. So, yeah, self-publishing is for me. In fact, I've never sent out a query letter.
That's awesome. I love it. I just love it. What has been the hardest thing about marketing for you?
Oh, I shouldn't say this, but I don't like marketing. I'm sure a lot of us don't. I'd rather get back to writing about things I've got in my mind. But I think one of the hardest things about marketing is being overwhelmed with all the services out there. And then once you just kind of hit and miss and try, it gets pretty expensive pretty quick.
Right.
But I think that's the hardest part for me. Also, I found out this, which I guess it's all right to share, on the Ron and Jackie book. Early on, I take the Atlantic magazine and some of those magazines, and early on, I placed an ad, which was expensive. It was like $1,500, and I placed an ad in that magazine, and suddenly it just seemed to kick off. I had all of this demand from the Northeast. Of course, I'm down here in the West Texas, but that surprised the heck out of me. But I've had other good experiences with the marketing. In fact, just today, the local television here came by and did an interview.
Awesome.
And then yesterday, our Midland Reporter Telegram, the newspaper, the Sunday edition, did an interview. So, you know, starting basically at home first, I'd gotten that advice early on, and I think that really helps.
Right, and that's awesome, and congratulations on the interviews. Make sure you send us the links so we can help you promote them.
Okay.
I'm excited for you. That is awesome.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize how much work actually goes into being a self-published author. Like you said, nobody likes marketing, but it is something. And many self-published authors are on a very fixed income. Like they don't, you know, they're working full-time hours, they're raising a family. And I just think that they don't realize that, you know, you have to find time for your writing, you have to find time for your marketing, and you have to sort of lay out a plan. How do you balance your life, writing, and marketing?
Well, I'm more fortunate than others because I'm retired. And what I do is I wake up, I start writing about 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm an early riser and early to bedder. and so I'll write till about 11 o'clock. And usually by that time I'm burned out on, I mean, I'm gassed as far as writing goes. And when I say writing, I'm also including research in that.
Right.
Because nonfiction requires a lot of research usually. And then after that, I work, you know, on marketing with the blog tours, with the
Sorry,
you know,
our geese are coming up. I had to shut our door. Go ahead. Sorry.
But then, you know, working through various organizations that I belong to, BK has been a big help. Just staying at it. And also I use LinkedIn to a great deal, which strangely is opening up India to me, which is quite a surprise.
That's awesome. And I think, you see, I love LinkedIn, and I think that authors, not even just authors, anybody in business really underestimates the power of LinkedIn.
Yeah, I agree.
You can make so many connections through LinkedIn, and that's what people are looking for, are, you know, business-minded and like persons, and you can really, I think that is awesome, and I love that you said that, because I really do believe that many authors don't realize what they can get themselves into through LinkedIn.
Yeah, and let me mention a little technique that I've used that seems to have worked fairly well. Both on Twitter, and I get help with this because I'm not good
Right.
on Twitter and Facebook, but fortunately I've got kids that are. But also on LinkedIn, I do this same thing. It really seems to work well on LinkedIn. I will put a little one or two sentence, usually a question, like, who killed Jackie Bancroft? And then under it, Jackie Bancroft, the WSJ heiress. And then under it, I'll put the title of the book. It's just amazing the reaction you get and how many views you get on LinkedIn.
I love that. I love that you just said that. That is awesome.
And I'll do that. I'll do that, a different thing like that, a question or something that's open-ended for 10 days, one after the other, to keep it going. And every day I get more and more views, more and more views. Now, I think that happens also on Twitter and Facebook, but tell you the truth, I don't keep up with the numbers there.
Right, and that's Facebook just changed their algorithms again, so I'm not so sure what's going on for ad-wise that way or view-wise. They just changed that, so that's something I have to look into. But I love that you said that about LinkedIn, and I think, you know, I try to teach authors, you know, about using like trivia in your book to help promote, you know, a one word,
right,
one sentence teaser, or a one sentence or a one word, you know, teaser word, or, you know, I just love that you said that. So follow by example, people.
Well, you know, you learn as you go, but it's a lot of fun too. Wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't. I mean, not going to prison's fun, don't get me wrong. but writing is fun.
I agree. And it's a sort of like therapy too, because you can sort of work things out in your own mind, and it's like you're talking to, and you don't, a lot of people don't realize it, but so many people are going to read your story and they're going to agree with you, you know, and
I
totally understand where you're coming from. So I just think it's wonderful. I love that you use social media as well. I'm really looking forward to reading your book. I'm hoping this weekend that I am going to get time to read. I'm going to try and get through all three of them. I'm very excited.
Oh, well. Okay, well, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. And again, I just want to throw it out there, guys. His books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Go to your local bookstore and request his books. Let's help him get shelved in the bookstores. And you can visit him at www.glennaron.com. And again, that is Aaron with two A's. You can Google his name, Glenn Aaron, or you can just go to the Prison Trilogy. You can Google that. And I believe your website for the Prison Trilogy is the Prison Trilogy, is it not?
Well,
let me pull it up.
It's glennaron.com, and then the Prison Trilogy comes up and the videos and stuff.
Okay, Prison Observer, that's what it was. I knew I was trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, right.
See, we both forgot. Oh, I love it. All right, Glenn, well, I thank you so much for chatting with us today, and I, like I said, I'm really looking forward to reading your book, your trilogy, and I'm really excited about your tour, so I hope that everybody checks you out, and thank you again so much for sharing your experiences tonight.
Well, absolutely, and thank you.
Absolutely. Now, guys, again, I just want to throw it out there. You can buy his books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold, and you can make sure to check him out at www.glennaron.com, and he is also on tour with the Virtual Book Tour Cafe. I hope you all enjoyed this segment, and I hope you all have a good night. And in the famous words of my grandfather, Cam Walker, save your money, y'all did. Have a great night, everybody. Bye.